You know, this podcast is like, it's like Thanksgiving with my grandparents. You know,
I was actually not going to make the old guy's joke and be like, yeah, that guy.
Somebody brings up a topic. Everyone thinks they have something to contribute, and ultimately they don't.
Yeah. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and it's the end of the year wrap for the Magic World, and I thought we should probably get back together with some of the guys that we ended last year with a sort of discussion, at least some of the gang. I've got with me David Kay, Mr. Silly Billy. Hey, David.
Hello, Scott. How's it going?
Great, my friend. And Cameron Ramsey, all the way from Rhode Island. How are you doing, man?
Hello, Scott and long time listeners, how's it going?
But you're not a first time caller. Yeah. Regrettably, at least as of right now, we don't have Dot Vickers nor Chase Goforth. They're the guys from Magic Newswire who we always used to get together with. They're not online right now, actually, that they've had some pretty hectic schedules over the holidays. And if it's possible, we might try to record something with them at a later date. But I thought I want to try to get something done in a timely manner, if we can. And aside from that, then also when I talked with Dodd, he was kind of under the weather, and every time he would start to chuckle, he was getting a tickle in his throat and having to cough. So I thought that could be kind of annoying, just listening to someone cough all the way through. But since it has been a while, since the listeners have had a chance to hear us together and kind of hear what we've been doing, I thought I would get caught up myself. And also, David, you and I ran into each other at the mid-year convention for the IBM SAM
yes,
joint convention.
That was fun.
Yep, great convention. We'll get a chat about that a little bit later, but tell me what's been happening since last January, kind of in a nutshell.
Well, actually, the best thing that happened to me or with me this year was that I received the Performing Fellowship Award from the Academy of Magical Arts.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty significant.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Let's see. It's one of the four that the board of directors and boards of trust and the board of trustees decide upon, on their own. It's not voted on by the members.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of really important people have won this award before, and I'm the first children's magician, in the 50-year history of the Magic Castle. So that's, exciting for me.
Well, the obvious question I think that everybody would like to know, how do you find out about this? I mean, obviously didn't just show up at the banquet. I mean, travel all the way across the country, you know, and they said, hey, you're the winner.
Yes.
They must have told you in advance or, you know.
Yes, I was sworn to secrecy, which was, lots of fun to keep a secret like that. Yeah, I got, I got an email from Joan
Lawton
wrote to me an email from her personal email account. And then I wrote back to her on her Magic Castle account. And I said, Joan, someone claiming to be you has just sent me the strangest email I've ever gotten. Something about, and I didn't want to say, Joan, did I really win? I kind of played it.
Yeah.
A very odd, was that really an email from you? And anyway, she confirmed it. And I was very, 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 very excited. It was a real honor.
Now, their banquet's like is in March. So when did they notify you?
The awards, is in April, early April. And I, found out, I think maybe around January. Yeah. I think they knew even several months before that, because somebody who knew asked me a question, what are you doing in April next year?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, oh, I'm around. He goes, all right, good. Just keeping that in mind. But, yeah, it was really, it's really great. You know, like, everybody's won this. Tamariz, Williamson, Penn and Teller, Blackstone, and me.
Right. Wow.
Which is very odd.
Yeah. Not a stage magician, a big illusionist, television personality or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, did they say when you got this what you were recognized for specifically? I mean, I would have awarded it to you for a long time ago because I think you deserve it. This is great. Did they? I'm serious. I mean, it not only because you're a friend, but just knowing what you've done that over the years certainly would deserve it. But did they say something?
Actually, I'm gonna hold on.
You got the certificate somewhere there in your drawer, right?
I'm literally, yeah. Actually, well, this is kind of interesting because I haven't publicly said this, and I might as well say it here. Max Maven wrote the inscription on the plaque, and it's really perfect. And I haven't. If you mind, is that a little indulgent, or is that okay?
No, I want to hear.
It's really beautiful, I must say, and I haven't made this public. So it says, "Performing Academy of Magical Arts presents a performing fellowship to David Kay." And then it says, "In recognition of a career in which he has used magic to entertain children and, more amazingly, to understand them. In the guise of Silly Billy, he has enthralled countless kids. While his character is indeed silly, behind the scenes, he has devoted himself to the serious study of how a performer interfaces with young minds. A significant percentage of magicians have children as their primary audiences. The Academy feels it's time to recognize a standout exponent in this field." And that's, like, amazing. And wow. Max got it perfectly. Perfect. Exactly what I've been trying to do, you know, my whole career. And he summed it up beautifully.
It's certainly true the way that you understand children in a way that's unique. You're just not doing the same birthday party for a 5-year-old as you do for a 10 or a 15-year-old, whatever. I mean, you recognize the different stages of adolescence and what the children will react to that may be different, as you've written about in your book and everything. There are a few people, I think, who have that acumen that you do.
Thank you. Well, yeah, thank you, Scott. And it's really, you know, it's really rewarding to be recognized for, you know, what I've really devoted my life to. Just something I do and something I love to do and never expected this. But it's really, it is a wonderful feeling to be recognized for the work that you do. And I'm really, really, you know, I'm extraordinarily proud of this.
Yeah, as well you should be. Yeah. And when you got the award, who presented that to you?
Stan Allen.
Okay.
And it was really beautiful. It was a beautiful show. There are some acts performing, and then they give out awards. And this used to be in a banquet room. Now it's in a theater. And beautiful theater in downtown L.A. And, it was great. Wrote a nice acceptance speech, and people really responded well to finding out about the award and to, you know, my comments when I received the award. And, and it's really good for kids magic. It, you know, and it's something I've been working towards, for a long time, is to get more recognition and acknowledgement and
respect.
Yeah, respect. Thank you for the art of children's magic, and this goes a long way in affirming that, I think, for the whole magic community. So
I think I told you before, I really always enjoyed your column in Magic Magazine, even though I'm not a children's entertainer. It had just some great pieces of advice and some good effects. I mean, even though I'm not a children's entertainer, I think all magicians certainly either have done children's shows or, like myself, still do occasional family shows in a corporate environment when they have their families, you know, with the spouse, you know, parents. And so it's important to be able to recognize these children and do good magic for them. And I always thought that was a well-written article, and you brought in a lot of expertise from other outside children's show entertainers who did just a great job of contributing to that column for so many years.
Thank you. And since you're mentioning it, I'm going to say that I guess we didn't come up to this question about what's in the future, but I have put those columns into I've compiled the columns, 100 columns into a book that Richard Kaufman is going to publish. And that will come out in the spring, I think. And so the columns will live on for everyone else to read.
That's great. It's kind of like the Show Doctor that Jeff McBride had published with Larry Haas. You know, it had a lot of great ideas. Now, with his book, after they put that out, they had like an addendum to each chapter. It was kind of like these are afterthoughts. You know, this was what was published, but since it, similarly, are you going to be having?
Yes. Instead of keeping it separate from what was originally published, I've just expanded the articles. I haven't highlighted what parts are new and what parts were original, but every article has been expanded. And I've also thrown in a lot of, you know, stuff like since this was published, here's what's happened and, you know, feedback I received on different columns over the years. So there you go. That's what's new for me.
Well, that's a major accomplishment during the year, and I guess you were traveling a little bit as well as doing other shows and lecturing at conventions and abroad. Yeah. Last year, you traveled, I thought, to Africa or someplace. But...
I did. Yeah, good memory. Last year, I was in South Africa. That's right.
Yeah.
This year, I was in Iceland, which was awesome.
It's different.
Yeah, Iceland was great.
I never think of that as being a hotbed, pun intended, for magicians.
I know, but I don't know. You know, it's not a big group, but it is. It's a small country, and but they brought me up there, and I did. Oh, this was fun. I did a lecture, of course, but I also did shows for the local kids. At a school, and it was great. It was just great. You know, I mean, I love performing for kids who live in other countries, because it continues to support my premise that kids are the same all over the world. They respond exactly the same way to children's magic in every country, and it's always really fun for me to do that. And just to see the kids reacting and just to see how, identically they all always react the same way as U.S. kids. And like you said, South Africa, last year I was in Japan as well and did shows there as well. I did shows in South Africa. I did shows in Japan and the kids, even though they don't understand everything I say in Japan, they react the same way.
Some of the silliness and some of the things that are just sight gags. That's interesting about how that regardless of the cultures, the children are children pretty much and react the same at certain ages wherever they are.
Yes.
I assume that was in Reykjavik, Iceland mainly? Or did you go back out into the rest of the...
There's nothing personal against all the Icelandic listeners. No, there's not much outside of Reykjavik, in Iceland. It's pretty empty.
It was 1972 when I came through there. Actually, I was flying over to Europe, and I had stopped over in Reykjavik because we were flying Icelandic Airlines.
Yep.
We were flying out of New York, and that was during the time of the Boris Spassky, Bobby Fischer chess match. It was going on that week, and in fact, we were my buddy and I were going to take like a 24-hour layover and try to catch the chess match. But we were in a hurry to get on over to Europe. We were going to watch the British Open, and we had a bunch of other plans. And so, it's another long story for another podcast, perhaps. But it wasn't a whole lot necessarily to see. Yeah, you say outside of Reykjavik. I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful country.
What's outside of the city is the nature, you know, geysers, volcanoes, glaciers. It's insane. The topography of Iceland is extraordinary. But yes, there's outside of the city, there are very few people.
Someone had told me years ago, and I don't know whether this is true, but I think that Iceland and Greenland actually had changed their names in order to fool.
Yeah, the Vikings. That's
the Vikings.
Correct.
Yeah.
The Vikings deliberately misnamed the two places so that they would send their enemies to Greenland, which is really just a giant iceberg, and their enemies would stay away from Iceland,
thinking
it was a giant iceberg.
Yeah,
it's true. It's exactly true.
Okay, I had heard that.
Iceland has never been talked about more in a podcast in history than it has, right?
Including the Icelandic podcast. Icelandic News Podcast.
My God.
Yeah, Icelandic News Podcast.
That's right. And if you don't mind, we have a lot more to talk about, so just stay out of it.
I'll go back to mute.
No. Go back to mute.
Go back to mute. Well, I was wondering, Cameron, if you had taken a break or something there that you weren't joining in. So, Cameron, tell me what you've
Awards did you win from the Magic this year?
Well, I'm just trying to think. Geez, next time we should put in the notes who should go first, because I'm thinking I should have started up on that one. Scott, what are you up to this April? Just asking.
Well, they asked if I was going to be available, actually. So now I kind of think I know what they were talking about.
I got the email too from the from the Magic Castle, but it was just because I didn't pay my bill last week. So,
actually, something kind of is really great for me this last year that happened that meant a lot and still does, and that is that the Magic Circle had recognized me as a member of the Intermagic Circle with Gold Star. So I got my MIMC, and when I received that unexpectedly, that letter came in the mail. You know, I took it into my wife and said, could you read this? Does this say what I think it says? And it just, you know, I was brought to tears. I mean, I was just so surprised and shocked that I know there are so few, just a finite number of living magicians, you know, with that title. And so I feel like, you know,
not much beautiful. More. There are, I believe there are 200 gold stars, and when someone dies, then a new star becomes available. Mm-hmm. And like you say, it's a finite number, and you know, in theory, those are the 200 most important magicians in the world, which is a wonderful honor for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And 50 of them are from Iceland.
And none of them from Greenland, I guess.
None from Greenland.
Yeah. So that was kind of what was exciting for me this last year.
When did you find that out?
That would have been, I want to say in August, I think it was, sometime this summer. So it was after you and I had talked in July, I'm pretty sure. So
I did notice that you added that to all your signatures.
I do now, yeah.
Yes, you should.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those things that mean a lot, particularly to magicians. And I think in England and in certain other sectors, I guess, that it's important. However, that within the general populace, whenever you're trying to book a show, you have to explain what that is. Same thing with the Magic Castle. In Houston, the Magic Castle doesn't mean anything necessarily unless you actually explain what it is. Then they're going to say, that the Academy of Magical Arts can explain it. But the same thing with being a member of the Intermagic Circle, that saying, well, there are only a few number, and they say, oh. So it's almost like you're patting yourself in the back. I want you to realize how important I am, you know. So
yes, it's a shame. It's a shame, but it's true. It is true. You know, I mean, we win. Yeah, our clients don't. You know, everyone who performs at the castle always puts in their bio, perform the world famous Magic Castle.
Unless you live in California.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody cares. I hate that way.
That's not fair to say about the castle, but to call, I think most of the general public doesn't know about the world famous Magic Castle. So you do have to explain it.
Yeah. I mean, if it takes longer to explain that than your actual show, you might want to move on.
It's kind of like telling a joke. You know, if you have to explain a joke, then it's kind of lost.
Well, Cameron, what color is your star? From the Magic Circle.
Chrome.
I can't even tell which organization we're talking about right now. Jeez.
Oh, that's good. Well, too bad you don't live in England and, you know, to, flaunt it.
Yeah, those Tuesday meetings must be hard to get to.
Monday night meetings.
Yeah, Monday, Cameron. Monday, please.
Yeah. You're obviously not among
you're
the.
You're proving your,
the circle. You're a young guy. You probably couldn't get in. You're under 21, I think, aren't you?
Let's scare the listeners about this one. They remember talking to me during my college days. I am 28 years old.
You're 28. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm not sure what the significance of that is.
Well, I mean, he said I was 21. I had to age myself a little bit here.
Yeah, you're much younger than me.
Actually, that is kind of amazing. Since we were doing Dodd's podcasts for years. Mm-hmm. So you did start very young. I didn't realize that.
I remember somehow being drunk at doing podcast in college, and then now we're here. Look at that. Everyone's got
nothing has changed.
Yeah, nothing has changed. I've already fallen asleep before the podcast even started.
Yep.
Scott had to wake me up.
Drunk.
And, it's all right.
Pull you out of the bathroom.
Yes.
A lot of things have happened then to us, and everything that's happened, kind of in the Magic community. One thing last year, it seemed like that there were just a lot of movies, about Magic. Last year, Now You See Me and Burt Wonderstone and some others. I can't think. Were there any movies that I've overlooked that happened in 2014?
Did the that independent movie, was that in 2014? Oh, God, I'm so sorry. I don't remember.
You're not thinking
I believe you're looking for the one Frozen.
No.
Make Believe or Desperate Acts of Magic or something like that? That was last year.
There was a guy. I forgot. There's a guy who went to Tannen's camp, and now he's a filmmaker. Really nice guy. He made a movie. Jonathan Levitt's in the movie.
That was Desperate Acts of Magic.
Yes.
But that was.
Did you say that already?
I just said that. Yeah, that was last year, I believe, or the year before.
Oh, okay.
I have seen that DVD up for sale, and I believe that, forgot what his name is. Last name's Gold. It was producer.
Joe? Yeah. I think Joe?
Joe Gold. I think that's right. Yeah, I've seen him post something on Facebook here recently, saying, hey, this DVD is still available. That was, Richard Turner had a movie, I think, that was released. Mm-hmm. And there was another, of course, documentary of James Randi that just won some film awards.
And Ricky Jay documentary.
Well, that was last year, I think, wasn't it?
You mean 2013?
Yeah, that was 2 years ago.
Yeah, because Cameron, remember, we were at Magic Live Convention. We saw that there.
I am very bad with my Magic movies. I still have not seen the Ricky Jay movie, and I can't even believe I said that out loud.
Wasn't there a
was good.
Was there another Magic Camp? I'm surely you're gonna.
Well, I know they're making it Now You See Me Too, so there'll be stuff back in the theaters. Just has to just like every other thing, there'll be rotations of it coming in and out.
Yep, there'll be some sequels, I'm sure. I think it's coming here. Now, one of the things, of course, that didn't make it to the movies but was a two-night docudrama or whatever was the Houdini movie, so to speak, I guess, on the History Channel with Adrian Brody. It was really good.
You know what's great about that movie? I got an email from I don't even know where, but someone was – one of the Houdini sites sent out an email correcting all the factual errors.
Yeah, that would have been John Cox with Wild About Harry. Daily blog on Houdini.
Mm-hmm. Really, those emails, there were two, because there were two parts to the film.
Right.
If you loved the film, you've got to read the truth about what they got wrong.
Well, they did have some things that were right also, because he did post that as well, saying here's what was right and here's what was wrong.
Yeah. So what's the name of that website?
It's Wild About Houdini. Although it's Wild About Harry is his website, but I believe someone already had that .com address. Mm-hmm. But, I thought even when they were casting that, we talked about this last year when Don Vickers had mentioned that, I thought Adrian Brody was kind of a strange actor to be cast in that role, since Houdini was like 5'2", and I think Adrian Brody's at least a foot taller.
Yes, but Adrian, as a magician or as a fan of magic, Adrian Brody was able to sit through the script reading because he likes magic.
Speaking of which, since you're out in New York and you go to a lot of plays and see a lot of these guys, have you met him or talked to him? You know anything about him personally?
No, I've never met him. No.
Mm. I just figure everybody in New York runs into each other all the time.
At the winners of the Academy of Magical Arts New York branch.
Right.
Winners circle.
Yeah.
Adrian Brody looks a lot like Louis de Matos.
I do not see that.
You don't? Oh, I think so. I think that's a
good analogy. Kidding?
Yeah.
Louis de Matos is handsome.
Well, no, I think if Louis would have curly hair, I think he looks a little bit like him, kind of tall and a little bit. I can kind of see that a little bit.
obviously.
Luis is a handsome man, though, you know.
You have not been with Luis in person.
I guess, obviously, Scott, you have not been invited to Portugal.
He is a very handsome man.
I won't now. He is a handsome man. That's what I was saying, you know, and Adrian Brody is a good actor.
Hey, wow. Don't
I'm not going to his house either, I guess.
We don't have to agree on Adrian Brody's house.
But then the other TV shows. I mean, this just, because there weren't any movies, there was a plethora of magic on television, not the least of which, of course,
was
Matt Franco having won America's Got Talent.
Excellent. Excellent point. Lots of magic on TV this year. There was a time, I know you're trying to open the door to Matt Franco, but let me just say that there was a time I remember a few months ago that my DVR had four magic shows
yep.
to record that week. It's amazing. Wizard Wars. Then it was the Fool Us
Carbonaro.
Was playing Carbonaro. Exactly. That's three. And then probably AGT made it four.
Yeah.
Amazing. And there were a lot of good magicians on AGT, not just Matt.
Did you say Masters of Magic also?
Ah, there you go. See? That's right. Tons of magic. That's right.
Right. And of course, now they got Extreme Escapes.
I don't know about that.
You could just start making up names and add the word magic to, and then just make up a TV network. And you'd be like, oh, yeah, I saw it the other
yeah.
day. It was great. I didn't like some of the kids' creativities on the show. I thought it was fake, but it was a great TV show.
Do you want to talk about Matt Franco?
I do want to go there in just a second, but since we were talking then about some of these other shows, there were different takes on magic. I mean, it was like Masters of Magic. I mean, they were just trying to say to me how many illusions you can kind of get through within a half hour, you know. I think the answer is zero. There are different audiences for each of those shows. I've had during this holiday season and doing shows, and I'm doing strolling, and people say, oh, you know, that it's so great to see a magician who won America's Got Talent. I heard someone else saying, do you ever watch the Carbonaro Effect? And then someone else said, you know, I was watching all these illusions on Masters of Magic, but it's one thing, this guy had a big balloon, and all of a sudden he appeared inside the balloon. You know, my point being is that people have their own favorites of what they have seen. Now, earlier this year, of course, I think that we finished with the last season of Criss Angel. So he was, you know, earlier on this year on the Spike Network.
Spike.
What was the show, Cameron? It wasn't Mind Freak. It was...
It's what the show is called now. Yeah, Belief, yes.
Belief, yeah. That was it. And then you got...
Criss Angel does magic, it's so camera trickful that he... In the title of the show, he's you know, begging you to believe that he actually did this stuff in person.
It took a long way to get there.
Yeah,
it was very funny in my head 3 minutes ago. I apologize.
Yeah, still working on that one. A joke in the making. You could see it crumble right before your eyes.
Yeah.
Right before your ears.
Well, I think what's really happened since we did the podcast weekly is the explosion of content on cable television with original content. And it's all on all of these magic shows, except for the Masters of Illusion genre, all these shows are under the reality TV genre. It's not a magic special or anything like that.
Well, another one. That was kind of a reality
Andrew
show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, although you could argue that whatever it takes to get magic on TV is fine with us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as it should be, I think. Even if they have to gimmicky it as a competition on Wizard Wars or reality, on Andrew Main, you know. More magic on TV is better. Oh, I was going to say,
I agree.
You know, you were talking about the speed of, Masters of Illusion.
Mm-hmm.
And what's amazing to me, and gosh, I'm burning a lot of bridges tonight, but Fool Us had...
You've already got your award. What do you care?
I know. That's right.
I can't take that back.
Fool Us was an hour, and it had only four, you know, sometimes four or five effects.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great, great magic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Masters of Illusion at 30 minutes had... whatever, 10 or 12, who knows, tons, so many effects, you know, per minute. And for me, it wasn't as nearly as fun to watch. But maybe
so
that's
a lot of that
magicians.
Had to do with, from what I believe, it was Masters of Illusions was an hour-long show that got cut down to a half an hour.
That's correct, but I thought it was an hour show that got cut into two half hours.
That
are you
could
saying?
Be, I from what it read like to me,
yeah,
was that they had all that content and they just had to squeeze it into X amount of episodes.
That makes more sense.
But I mean, in all actuality, though, in editing wise, that's
yes,
a
right.
show that is a lot like Masters of Illusion. What is the shows that were on back in the day, where they were right before Thanksgiving? Oh God, the variety magic.
Oh,
shows.
Well, there was
Masters of Illusion. No, Magic of Illusions. No,
this is
where Matt
NBC?
Franco would usually be. Yes.
Holy smokes!
I know what you're talking about. It used to be on around Thanksgiving time.
Let's
just
call it yeah.
Mac used to do those interstitials, right?
The
before and after the commercials, yeah.
So that show nowadays wouldn't be that fun for an audience to watch. It's way too slow. So you can see where Masters of Illusions made that into a faster show. But they kept a lot of the, here's where I get to burn the bridges, cheesy MC voiceover bits that were still in the NBC special 20 years ago.
Oh, funny.
To me, it just looked like a lot better camera quality and editing. Editing meaning different, quicker edits.
Well, they did have a lot of editing, that's for sure, because I remember when Chris Hart was on, and they then after his one bit, they cut to other people, and within that night, they had, you know, 6 or 8 or 12 different people. And I, you know, sent him a message, said, hey, you look great. And he said, I haven't had a chance to see it. He said, which part did they show? He said, they cut several pieces out, and they're going to show card manipulation next week or whatever. And so that's why I think you saw some of the same magicians on other nights, because they all filmed at one time, you know, and then just kind of cut and edited to add them, you know, to add more variety, you know, down the road.
Yeah.
I mean, the episode that I watched, the person that got the most time was Mike Finney's card on forehead.
He sure did. That was fantastic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I heard a lot of people had a lot of, just common layman who had said, you know, that stood out for them, that particular routine. Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's nice.
There was even more. I mean, David Blaine had his special. There was tons of one-off specials in the cable industry. But, you know, David Blaine did his last magic special since the last time we've talked.
Mm-hmm.
Which one was that?
Real or Not? I think I said that.
Yeah, that was good.
Oh, I forgot
really
about that. Yeah, that was good. Now I remember some of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was an hour and a half long show, which I thought interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That was his first magic special that didn't really have one of the big finale endings.
I was saying about America's Got Talent that now you were telling me before we started recording, Cameron, that
what I said before I started recording is not what I'm going to say during the podcast.
No, I yes.
That's good.
Just that. Didn't you say that Matt was from the Rhode Island area? You know him?
Oh, me and Matt is a Rhode Islander. We went to college together. We went to the same magic club growing up. We have grown up together, and this is the best thing ever for Rhode Island.
That's nice. I don't know Matt, but everyone who does says he's a really nice guy.
Yeah, no, Matt is a well-rounded kid.
Yeah.
He's an awesome performer. When you see him on stage, that is him in real life. It's awesome now. He's not a single guy, so he gives all the chicks my numbers now, and you know, a couple pounds later, you know, the magician. It's the same thing in Rhode Island. You get the idea.
Is he about your same age? About 28-ish?
Yeah, Matt's a year or two younger than me. But we even went to college together.
Did you go to Emerson?
The University of Rhode Island. Emerson. Give me a break.
Oh, sorry. So what?
Oh, you have more than one university in Rhode Island?
Oh, we got Brown. We got more than one.
Okay.
I can only name one, though, after that one.
So it was interesting that not only did he win, but there were several magicians who went forward. You know, Lehman, David and Lehman? Or?
Yeah, terrific.
Yes.
I thought they did a great job.
Mike Super was the other magician.
Smoothini?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Smoothini.
What's his name?
Smoothini?
Smoothini. The Ghetto Houdini?
Smoothini. Yeah. And also, what's his name? Rogue, who's a guy, local guy. I don't know how far he didn't get as far as the others, but there's a guy named, you look it up. There was a guy named Rogue. I think he was in it last year, Rogue.
So I went to
from
three,
Queens.
I went to
I went to two different America's Got Talent auditions with other magicians to help them out.
Mm-hmm.
One of the days I was there, the act before I was with a mentalist. The act before us was a magician. The act after us was a dueling set of magicians. And the guy holding the camera was a former magician.
Well, so he knew how to shoot it and make it look good.
Yes, it was there was a lot of magic at AGT this year, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I can only imagine the lines next year.
Well, funny you mention that. You know, I had a phone call just this last week, you know, from them saying, hey, we're going to be having auditions in San Antonio. We'd love to have you come. And also, we'll send you an email if you can spread the word and let the other magicians in Houston area know about this. I just think that everybody's going to be turning out thinking, hey, you know, magicians went pretty far last time. And I agree, there'll be a longer line of magicians thinking that they've got a better chance. But I don't think lightning's going to hit. You know, no. Twice.
AGT doesn't like singers winning because they're all the other singer competitions. Mm. But I think our chance has come and gone.
This is the only the second time that a singer hasn't won AGT.
No, Terry Fader won. And then they had a dog act that won a couple of years ago.
I wasn't counting Terry Fader. I was counting the dog act. In my head, Terry Fader is still a singing act for them, contract-wise.
I see your point. In a way, yeah.
Yeah, good point.
Well, so there have been a lot of TV shows, and I was going to say, let's move on then to
and Johnny
something else.
Thompson has been involved in every single one of them almost. Let's give that man a hand. He's 80 years old, works more now than he did when he really was retired.
That is a good point. And I remember when we had him on Magic Newswire with Pam, and it seems like didn't she fall in love with you? Cameron?
Yes.
Or vice versa?
Did. Yes. Let's put it this way. Once I actually had to work on a couple of projects with Johnny, and the awkwardness of him going, wait a second, is that? Yes, that was me.
Whoa. Real.
Funny. Well, and speaking then of shows and Johnny Thompson in Las Vegas, I kind of want to have a transition then maybe perhaps into that to talk about, you know, some of the shows that have come and gone in Las Vegas that we're both, or both, all three of us, I guess, are pretty far removed from Las Vegas, but just kind of speaking about some of the shows.
I have this image of like somber death music going on right now, and then a slideshow of every single Vegas show that has come and gone over the last year.
What shows are we talking about?
You know, the only one that really kind of comes immediately to mind, only because I had spoken with Murray Sawchuk on a podcast here just recently, was that he had finished his 2.5-year run at the Tropicana Laugh Stop and is starting a new show, or has started, December 20th, then with Planet Hollywood, which is a Caesars property, I guess, and working in the Sin City Theater. What's interesting is that he had ended the one show, started the next one just a couple of months later, and also doing an afternoon show as opposed to an evening show. And then Mac King has had his contract renewed, and he's been performing, I don't know, is it 15 or 17 years longer than Siegfried and Roy, which I think is kind of amazing. So he's the longest running magic show, even longer than Siegfried and Roy in Las Vegas. And so he's got an afternoon show. I think his is a different time. It's like 1 and 3, and I think Murray's is 2 and 4. Plus, both have different styles, and Murray's doing illusions and other kinds of stuff. So I don't think there's a lot of conflict, but those are the only things I can think of offhand.
I mean, you have Nathan Burton. I mean, there's a lot of magic just in the Planet Hollywood Theater. You have Nathan Burton, Nathan Burton, and then I'm forgetting one other, the hypnotist, the mentalist.
Terry McCambridge.
Terry McCambridge, too. Well, Juan Ravin is actually in the Tropicana now, I believe, in the big theater itself.
Isn't Puff the magic dragon? Piff. Does he have a show, or he's in a show?
I believe he is an act in a show that's like a club show that's kind of like Absinthe. I wish we had our Las Vegas contributor here on the line with us.
Yeah. Nope, I can't. Can't think what that show is, but yeah, it was part of a variety show. And also one of the reasons that Murray had moved is that there was another magician who was moving into the theater, and they didn't want to have a conflict, apparently, at the Tropicana. And he had been there. It's a different kind of a show. And I can't remember what his,
This podcast is like It's like Thanksgiving with my grandparents. You know?
I was actually not going to make the old guy's joke and be like, that guy. And then,
somebody brings up a topic. Everyone thinks they have something to contribute, and ultimately they don't.
Yeah.
I'm apologizing officially. I apologize, people, listeners.
Well, I mean, if we just kept along with the actual program here, the next thing after Murray's was the Chris Angel Believe show, filling in during his soldier surgery.
Yes.
Oh. That's a show I wish I had seen.
Yeah, that was something that was kind of interesting. Kristen Lambert and Banachek and some others had filled in for about a 6 or 8 week period, I think, as part of the Cirque du Soleil show when Chris was out for a while. So each of them were doing like a 12 to 15 minute bit, I think.
I mean, just the birth of the variety magic show overall is what the main topic really is. Masters of Illusions traveling around the country, and then the Illusionist traveling around the country. Yeah. Or it's in New York right now.
Yes, it is.
Have you seen that?
Then coming to Rhode Island.
Did you get to see the show? Did you go over Broadway and see it?
I did. I think it's terrific. I think it's absolutely great. Got no problems with it whatsoever. The only criticism that I heard prior to going was that a friend of mine who was in it said that magicians are often disappointed because they've seen these acts before.
Like at magic conventions, you mean?
Yeah, at magic conventions and just the way we live our lives, we've seen these acts before. Yeah. That may have been true, but it didn't bother me at all. Well, in New York, the theater is it's not very small, but it's small compared to the houses they've been playing in. It's a relatively small Broadway theater. So it's very intimate. And they've got dancers and they've got pyro and they produce a train. Or maybe I shouldn't be saying all that, but it's really, really great. It's a really great magic show. It's hard to pull off a live magic show for the public. This is a really strong show.
So, and now you say a smaller theater. How many seats? 1,000, 500, or?
Gosh, I don't think it's as many as 1,000. It's got to be more than 500 to be considered a Broadway theater. So it's somewhere between that, but it's, you know, Wicked is in a 1,400 seat theater. This is at least half as big, at least as much as half as big, not bigger than half as big. So it's a small room.
I had just read recently, like today or yesterday, that they had actually recovered their $1.5 million investment, and so they were going to be coming back to Broadway again.
Terrific.
And I mean, after playing Sydney and here, and they've got a lot of other plays, they're going to be coming through Houston.
They'll bring in the 2.0 or that 1800s thing that they're running.
Yeah, the 1903 show with
thank you.
Rick Thomas, Charlie Fry, Kalen and Ginger. There really hasn't been much about it. I've only seen the 30-second trailer that just shows the magicians. But
well, they just started.
I hate to say, Rick Thomas is one of my all-time favorite magicians, and this is something
like
that me and Matt Franco talk about all the time. If you would describe Rick Thomas to me, and if I never saw it, I'd probably say, oh, God. But every time I go see Rick Thomas, I turn into a kid and just smile for the whole time.
That's nice. He's a nice guy. He's got a great feel to him on stage. He always looks like he's having fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like a kid on stage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost amazing that a convention show – I mean, let's call Masters of Illusions and all of these – the Illusionist a convention show. It's kind of incredible that a convention show really hasn't toured and been this successful before.
Well, I think a lot of that has to do, well, the talent is extraordinary, but also I think this hook works. The inventor, the joker, the futurist. I think that's I don't have to tell you, but I think that hook really works.
Well, it kind of does. It categorizes each magician separately. If we can go bring it back to TV shows, if you want to become a celebrity magician, don't go on a TV show where there's going to be 8 other magicians on there. Be on a show by yourself. But the Illusionist was able to differentiate each magician perfectly so the audience can describe each of them.
Yeah.
In one word or two. Yeah. Good point.
And by the way, I want to do a shout out to Dan Sperry. Dan's Bird Act is one of the top, honestly, one of the top 3 or 4 bird acts in history. Dan, maybe it's because he's doing it so much, but it's great. So that for me, that was a highlight of the Illusionists show.
You know who they're missing out on? They should really have Jeff on that show. I know they had him on one version or another, but I feel like Jeff McBride as the Kabukiist or whatever his title was at that point.
The Kookiest.
That is a great character for that show.
Yeah, he's different. You're right.
Yeah, that would bring some variety, certainly. It's just probably a matter of his time. I mean, Jeff's involved in so many things.
Yeah.
For him to make a commitment to do something on a tour like this and take him away from the rest of the stuff, I mean, you got to really carve out a big chunk of your time to make this commitment to go on this tour to do all this and the practice and all the kind of stuff that goes with it. It's got to be difficult.
David, are you going on the Illusionist tour now with all these credentials? You can be the kid guy.
I come out and I have my plaque sort of hanging around my neck, and I talk about it for about
like 10 minutes. Flavor Flav.
Like I did tonight, and then that's it.
And then you go into your Iceland bit.
Yeah, my thing is I'm the egoist.
The egoist. Well, you know, talking about, you know, having a title for each of those groups, that's, again, kind of what the Supernaturalists are going to be doing this next year. They're going to be opening in Connecticut at Foxwood, which is the Chris Angel's Believe show on the road, basically. Yeah.
Hey, Danny, if you're listening, I could use a comp or two. Rhode Island's, you know, a skip over.
That's not too far away. Yeah, you might happen to have to go over and catch the show and then give us a review on that. But he is, called The Mentalist. So similarly, I think that these guys have got, different credentials. In other words, that they, we'll say like from Africa, Banachek, The Mentalist. So they're, you know, showing the international flavor, you know, of,
Yes, what you're trying to say is that, and I'm not surprising anyone with this, it's real. Chris Angel is really ripping off the Illusionists, even in the promo photo.
I disagree.
Whoa. Okay.
I've had a lot of conversation with Banachek about this. In fact, that I just had a podcast that's recorded with him about it and talked about how this is going to be. What Chris is saying that he wants to revolutionize the magic show the way that Cirque du Soleil has revolutionized the circus and making it something completely different. And he said, without going into too much detail, it will be, you know, something different. And as far as, you know, the picture, you know, being similar, the Supernaturalists, like in that V formation with someone leading the front, there aren't any or many other kinds of configurations that would allow you to feature someone prominently without being in that bowling pin or V formation, you know? So
I'm not sure I agree with that, but
yeah, okay. I mean, that's a good line. that's company policy.
If Banachek feels that Chris Angel is going to revolutionize the magic show, that would be great, and I can't wait to see it.
I'm anxious to see it
as well. As from my point of view, with the little bit that they've, you know, of information that they've trickled out, a lot of it seems mimicky.
To copy the Illusionists, and that's what I thought too, but he continues to try to convince me that no, this is going to be different. He's my best friend, so I believe him.
I mean, it's not a copycat. That's almost like, let's call the producers of The Illusionist a copycat of every convention that we've gone to growing up. I mean, it's just because of one picture, let's not kill all the performers on the show. I want to go into it with an even heel and possibly a free ticket, Scott.
Well, I see where you're coming from.
If this magic show is going to be the Cirque du Soleil of magic, I'll tell you, I am looking forward to seeing Banachek in a onesie jumpsuit with makeup all over his face and a little hood. You know, in those
one of those pre-show clowns in all the shows.
Those long gloves with the long fingers and walking around on all fours.
Yeah.
Bending spoons.
Walking around with spoons kind of instead of stilts. These oversized spoons. Very weird. Hey,
how come nobody has done an oversized spoon bending act? Yeah, I think we got it.
That's good. That's very funny.
Well, at least it could be seen from the balcony, you know. If it's not explaining.
It doesn't need to be visual. It's mentalism.
That's right. It happens in your mind. Like that. Well, another thing is that last year we had some off-Broadway shows that were playing, as well as in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Del Gaudio and some other guys were doing different kinds of shows. Has there been anything that you've seen in Broadway or magic shows?
Here's where I get the name drop. I got to sit in the back seat with Johnny and Teller to see The Tempest in Cambridge this summer. That was a magic themed show, which was incredible. I don't know if anyone got to see The Tempest. I believe it's playing. Yes, it was in Vegas, and then it came to Harvard, and I believe it went to the same theater that Fool Us was in L.A.
It was directed by Teller.
There was a lot of magic in it. It was an incredible show, and I'm not a big Shakespearean person at all, and it was an awesome thing to see.
Again, I can't think of many other kinds of shows that were specifically like what we had in 2013.
Well, I will say this. Monday Night Magic is the longest-running magic show in the history of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
I think they broke the record this year. I might be wrong, but they've been doing this for 17 years. So shout out to Monday Night Magic every Monday night. They're still going strong. Very good houses, full, often very almost sold out, and great acts. So Monday Night Magic is still here, and that's nice.
Yeah, though they've moved in different venues, I know, over the years, and they seem to have settled on one now. They were there where the Majestics were playing until the theater closed and then moved around, but they've been now where they are at least 5 or more years, I think.
Yeah, it's
about right.
At least 5, yeah.
I did get to watch the Today Show feature this couple weeks ago with George Schindler with the
I always get those two guys confused.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They're so similar.
I was hoping you guys were actually going to – I do all the time. Oh, that's too bad. with the Breakfast Club having to move, which I guess is a really big thing in New York culture because they featured it on the Today Show.
I know.
Restaurant's closing.
You know, okay, it's the lunch. It's lunch, not breakfast. Moron. No.
Why? They don't get up early enough to go have breakfast?
The New York guys, boy, the New York guys love that lunch, that magic table.
Mm-hmm.
They love it. I don't know what to say about that.
They're moving it to another restaurant?
How about this? Yeah, let's just go to the restaurant. I hope the tradition keeps on going.
That's right. Well, the Edison is the hotel and the restaurant that they've been meeting in for 50 years. And they are redoing the restaurant and turning it into a fancy schmancy restaurant. And so the magicians have been evicted from their meeting area. Although, from what I can imagine, going out to dinner with magicians, the restaurant is not going to lose their shirt by kicking the magicians out. These guys probably order a cup of coffee and an English muffin and sitting there for 4 hours making waitresses pick cards.
Yeah, can I have another cup of coffee?
They had to redo the place just to get them out.
That's right. Maybe it's all a fake. Well, I will say the magicians, especially the old timers like George Satirial, you know.
This is what happens when you start a podcast at 10:30, okay?
These guys love the magic table. And in fact, the truth is, for what it's worth, in the old days, in the 1940s and the 1950s, New York had 10 or more magic shops in it. Really? This was before the magic. It's a story that's been told many times. Before the Magic Castle opened and the Magic Castle started attracting all these magicians to Los Angeles, New York was the center of magic. And indeed, the magicians who were in town would go to the magic shops and then they would meet for lunch at this thing. And it was a very social event. And, you know, all the big names were there. And it really hasn't been like that. You know, like its prime in many, many years.
Well, likewise, they had a similar thing in Chicago. There's a Chicago Round Table, you know, with from what I've heard.
I don't know.
In the old days. Well, I mean, of course, you're a New York guy. Mm-hmm. But from what that I have read about, you know, Johnny Paul and so many other guys, I guess, who used to meet and be part of the Round Table, because there were, I think, within a 7-block area in downtown Chicago at one time, there were 5 or 8 different magic shops.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very tight area right around there. With, of course, now there are fewer and fewer magic shops, brick and mortar shops. Everything is kind of online, and we've, you know, are starting to see the brick and mortar kind of go by the wayside. And I think, with Denny and Lee's, you know, whenever that, Denny's Magic Studios finished or whenever he's ready to retire or give it up, I don't think he's going to have anybody to sell it to, you know, as an example. You know, I think that those, unfortunately, are going to be just like these restaurants where guys are sitting around, you know, and meeting. You know, now people have sat around. I think the internet, or like right now, just over Skype.
Yeah, we're doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you guys are ever in Boston, you got to go to the Magic Art Studio, Ray Goulet. That is still the tradition that you guys talk about in New York and Chicago is still living in Boston.
I've not done that. I'd love to do that, though, someday. Well, that's another thing in Boston. Of course, they have the Mystery Lounge, you know, that, you know, Mike Bent and John
Steve
Stetson. Steve Gridolfer. That's what I was going to say.
David Oliver, John Stetson, mm-hmm. Mike Bent, and all those guys run that's been going on for almost as long as the Monday Night Magic now.
I think they may have been inspired by that. It was just a few short years after the Monday Night Magic that they did
and
start
that. And if you notice, they copied the exact photo formation as Monday Night Magic.
Yeah.
With the guys that's lined up. Yeah.
Stetson in the front with his arms crossed. You can see it. You can see that now.
Yeah. David Oliver holding a balloon. speaking of which, you know, I have a picture.
Hey, wait.
Of,
oh, yes. Go ahead. I know what you're going to say.
Of you, David, and David Oliver and myself at Magic Live convention many years ago. I think probably the first one. And then a couple of years later, we had another one that was out in front of the theater. So I know Magic Live is going to be having another convention this coming year. And I think this next year is just going to be like a perfect storm of conventions. I mean, I'm personally going to be going to FISM. And as soon as, I get back, that's like the 9th through the, or 5th through the 12th, I think it is. And then, as soon as I get back, I got to, hurry to Jacksonville. I'm a co-chairman for the IBM convention. And so that's going to be happening, like the 15th through the 18th, I believe, and then of July. And then when we get back after that, home for a couple weeks, and then Magic Live in 1st of August, and then later is going to be the Genie Bash. And so those are some things that, and then the TAOM convention, you know, Trixie Bonds, the president for the it's going to be here in Austin next year. It's going to be a great convention. So there are a lot of things that are going. Plus, we have I'm involved with MBU, Magic Business University, which is going to be out in Clinton, New Jersey in April. There are a few new conventions coming this year. But this last year, I went to several conventions. As I started off saying, you know, David, you and I had attended the mid-year meeting that was the combined convention in St. Louis. Any comments about that? Or would you?
I had a great time. I worked it. Mm-hmm. I lectured there with Danny Ormeid.
Any awards? Did you get anything?
I had to turn it all down. They were asking to give me awards.
Give you something?
No, actually, it was a really good contest. I judged part of the
Yes, we did. I sat next to you.
Yes,
we were,
yes.
Judging.
That was really nice. That was a very nice experience. We judged
the
Scott and I were part of the committee that judged the I guess we were the judges of the stage contest.
Mm-hmm.
Normally when I work a convention, I'm extremely busy and I don't get the chance to enjoy the convention, but this one was long enough that, I really had a great time. It was a I thought it was a really strong convention. The location was great.
Right.
The theater was beautiful. The hotel was great.
It was good weather also, so you can cross the street, go over there whenever they had the theater. As you say, the hotel was wonderful. And it was a long convention. It seemed like it was about 5 days long or something. And so you did have time to kind of get around to see people. There were a lot of dealers in the dealer's room, but it wasn't packed so that you couldn't turn around. A lot of good variety, I think, you know.
Yeah, I thought it was great. And, well, boy, I don't know. I think the future for the IBM and the SAM is to go combined. I really don't think they're going to.
I hope they do.
Good.
Yeah.
Can I tell you some – let's have the IBM and the SAM members write some notes down that I've been thinking about to maybe get their organizations in shape for a little bit here. Why are we forcing new members to find magicians – they make the process of signing up for the organization too hard. A magic shop just wants to have a person's credit card. All of a sudden now to join my prestigious organization, I have to find two magicians, sign all this. The steps to get someone to sign up for anything nowadays need to be quick and easy. The door needs to be opened very wide and then making it smaller. What we are doing is making that door smaller. And hopefully somehow it's going to get wider later on.
I think that is a great idea. Listening.
Magic shops are making more money than they ever have. There are more magicians now than there ever has been in the world.
it should not be that hard to become a, you know, it's not that hard to become, to get a business card that says I'm a magician. It's not that hard to get a magic trick now. Why is it that hard to sign up for the organization?
Yep.
Yeah, good. Anybody can sign on to YouTube, and you don't even have to have an account to watch and learn a secret.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it should be easier. That certainly makes sense. That's something to ponder. Perhaps when you say making the door wider and then perhaps making it narrower to be joined, that there can be levels, much like, again, the magic circle, that after you have achieved certain things that you are awarded something that is prestigious.
Yeah, that's
and the
nice.
Same thing on the – And the same thing on the local level, I personally don't think anyone should be kicked out of an organizational meeting or have to worry about not being allowed into it because they don't belong to a club, a society yet. That should almost be the gateway to get them to join into the SAMs and the IBMs, not the stopping point and the handicap for the local assemblies.
Well, it used to be, of course, that they wanted to make this more kind of cloaked in secrecy, so this way that you felt like you were part of an organization, the secret handshake and all this kind of stuff, you know, I guess like the Masons or something, I guess. But a lot of those organizations are still having problems, as we are in the magic community, trying to get members because people are not joiners today. And if they are, they're joining online communities, you know?
You can't say that the reason these clubs are having trouble is people are not joiners. There's a lot of people are, like Cameron says, there are a lot of people buying a lot of magic online. Mm-hmm. And,
I've heard that excuse many a times now that the Elks clubs are dying, all of the Knights of Columbus clubs are dying. Yes, those are correct. But you know what? I also belong to a 3D club, 3D printing club. That is huge and thriving right now. I also belong to a startup community right now that is huge and thriving, which is just a bunch of geeks that get together once a week in Providence. Clubs overall aren't falling apart. It's just the ones that want to at this point.
Yeah. Well, I just heard about some different community that I was completely unaware of, and that is the gaming community, I guess, that online gaming, that have these huge conventions where they just go and sit in chairs and they watch these big screens and there are guys up there, you know, playing against each other on the video games, and there are tens of thousands
Did
of people who attend
that,
these.
Did you hear that, Uncle Tony? There's kids playing video games now.
That apparently is the next new wave. It may even be a wave that is already here that I just hadn't recognized until just recently. But my point is kind of agreeing with you that perhaps it's the organizations themselves that they're not wanting to join. You know, that people are finding other outlets or things that they find of interest, and perhaps we need to do something to generate that interest.
When you're trying to sell something online, doesn't matter what product you're trying to sell. The least amount of clicks that a customer has to do is your best way for them mm-hmm. to buy. Mm-hmm. The more friction you give them, the least amount of chance you're going to have to do it. So if somebody has to go to see a club, then find two people that doesn't know that hopefully that they belong to the IBM or the SAM, then that they can possibly sign into the big organization. So then they can finally go to a lecture and, hey, I get $5 off my membership now. Guess what? And then guess what? If they go to their friends and their friends aren't part of the SAM and the IBM, then, it looks bad then. Then they don't think they need to belong to that club.
There are a lot of people who attend the lectures, but then they don't stay for the club meetings.
Well, they have to do something. This happened last year, and I haven't read. I guess Magic Magazine has written about it in the next issue. They had this Magic Club Summit.
It was in Las Vegas, right. Right.
Yeah. Do you know anything about that, Scott, how that went?
Very little. We had two guys who had left Houston to go to that and came back. One was an SAM representative, the other one from our IBM ring, and had both come back and had given us their ideas and basically gave a rundown. And yes, it's, as you say, it was a sharing of ideas. You know, what have other clubs found to be successful to help their group grow, and what can we try as a new idea that might work for us, you know, that has been proven successful over here. So it was really an opportunity, I think, mostly of a sharing of ideas. You know, they had some people give some short TED talk type of things. There were a lot of roundtable discussions and everything. And overall, you know, I heard a lot of positive feedback from everybody who had attended and enthused and re-energized to come back to the clubs to try to, you know, build a membership and to get more interest in activity.
Yeah, but I mean, I read the article, and to me, it's a bigger problem than, hey, we have to come up with more creative ideas
for non-lecture months at the clubs. It's a more mecca issue than just creativity nights and contest nights for the groups. Silly thought. I think the organization should, anyone that's interested in becoming a member of either organization, the organization should be willing to send that person 3 months of whatever magazine, the IBM or the Lincoln Ring, the ebook editions. I'm not saying send,
right.
God forbid we spent $15 on a possible member, but the ebook edition, and that you give them a reason to show what you're getting out of it and not just, you know, you get a card in the mail.
You mean like past editions that you would automatic?
No, they get like a 90 day trial membership for free. They get what it's like to be a member. Just like, hey, when you sign up for any software now, you get 90 days to see how it is, and that's how they get you.
That's an interesting thought.
Great idea.
As we kind of start to wrap up over here, I kind of want to conclude with something that's kind of just thoughts on some people who have passed this year. And we have had a lot of people from our Magic community who have passed on, and you know, some who are still with us but not doing well. You know, Simon Lovell, I had interviewed him a few times, and I chatted with him just a couple of days before he went over to England to, you know, go into a home and try to get better. And is still doing well, so I don't mean he's one of these people who have passed on by any means, but I haven't had an opportunity to find out how I can get in touch with him. I'd love to do that and let everybody know, but I'm not sure quite yet how to get in touch with him. But as for those, obviously Joni Spina had passed this year, a great lady. Any thoughts? I mean, you guys had known her, met her well as well.
I didn't know her very well, but the work she did in Magic Magazine and on M360, you know, Magic Magazine's video arm is called M360. Mm-hmm. And Stan's been very nice. He's put some of my stuff up on it. But I urge everybody to go to Magic Magazine's M360. There's great, great content. And one of the things that he's got, that Stan's got, is video from Joni doing what she does,
mm-hmm.
teaching about directing and making your act better. And if there's one way to celebrate her life is to watch her in good health,
at her best,
really talking about amazing, amazing things. She was very, very good at what she did.
She was, and loving and caring person as well. I'd known her for a number of years, and she spent her last few days and months here in Houston while she was awaiting transplants at the hospital. But before that, she had come first of all for some tests to find out that, you know, she could qualify. And then as I was taking her back to the hospital, we were just talking about my poster collection and things I collect. She said, oh, I bet I've got, you know, some that you don't have, you know, when I was traveling with David Copperfield. And I said, wow, I bet you do. And, you know, about a month later, whenever that she came, and she was staying with Dan Summers at his home. And so, you know, Dan called and said, hey, you know, that we'd like to have you come up. Joni's got something for you. And I said, oh, okay, well, and of all the things that she had to worry about, that she brought this big tube of posters, you know, for me. It is just, you know, something I'll never forget, you know, that, it was very beautiful and just shows the kind of caring person that, you know, the self-effacing, how she cares about other people and such a serious time that she had, you know, trying to dispose of all of, you know, her worldly belongings and kind of, accepting that this is going to be her future, you know. And there were several others, you know, who had passed on, you know, this year then too. Anybody else that you guys want to mention? Or,
well, I want to say that I'm very happy that David Oliver is still alive.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I think it's almost tragic to imagine that both of them, Joni and David, required really, really complicated transplants.
Yeah.
And, you know, just the way things go, David is here and Joni is not. And we
similar
almost,
situations.
Yeah, we almost lost David too. So luckily.
Yeah, he's doing so much better and gaining weight and performing and seems to be quite.
He's great. He performed in the show at the Magic Castle, at the award show, I think, but he was definitely, he played the castle the week after when I was there as well, the week after. And so we spent the whole week together and, He is so great on stage still. He's got it. His sense of humor.
Good timing.
His dry wit. It's just terrific. Yeah. Thank goodness for that.
Yeah. One person that had died earlier this year that was unexpected was Aldo Colombini.
Yeah.
After the first year, you know, and I tried to talk with Rachel and she just could not talk. You know, she hasn't yet been able to bring herself to a point where she feels like she can hold it together long enough, even after all this time, you know, to talk about him. But creative guy that we had lost there. And speaking of creative, Lubor Fiedler was another fella.
Yeah.
You know,
thank God Stan got to bring him to America for the last mm-hmm. Magic Live, and then to have him talk, and that was, you know, what an awesome mad scientist that guy was. To spend a week with him would have been incredible.
Definitely so, and then a trade show veteran, guy who kind of, one of the people who pioneered it, of course, Bud Dietrich, passed this last year. I think his wife had died a few years earlier. And they were just a great team, and she was a lovable woman. So it's kind of hard to see him, you know, pass then as well. And Phil Wilmarth, because Phil was a guy, you know, that it was the emeritus publisher or editor, you know, it was editor for the Linking Ring for such a long time, and it brought us so many, you know, good articles and everything that had for the Linking Ring, and was a good lecturer, good performer. Nice guy, past international president of the IBM. Another great guy. And can't forget Ace Greenberg. And, you know, they're in New York. And, of course, you probably knew him better than the three of us. I met him several times, and he had given me a quote for a DVD that I had produced that he liked. Nice. But he always do you have any good stories about Ace Greenberg? I know he and Richard Kaufman were partners.
Sure. No, I don't. I did his grandson's birthday party. If that means anything. It was funny too, when I got booked for this gig, I guess the wife, you know what it must have been that, yes, the wife had a different last name. That's why I didn't know it was, him. Hmm. Anyway, I saw him at the gig. He was like being a grandfather. I mean, this amazing man who was, powerhouse in the financial mm-hmm. world, and he was just being a grandfather at his grandkids' birthday party.
Did he know who you were, or did the plaque on your chest define you?
No, well, I opened my show with
production of this trophy.
Yes, 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 yes.
And all the kids go, what?
That's right.
I can't believe, and I had to read this name five times, and then I got to the parenthesis after it to figure out what you meant by it.
Okay. Well, tell everybody what you're talking about, because
Montecore. I kept reading Montecore. Montecore? Who was Montecore? And then Siegfried and Roy's tiger.
Had to put him down, finally.
Montecore version 8.0.
I don't know what to say about that.
No, I mean, you know what? We know what's incredible is that the Mirage has kept open the Enchanted Garden, and that it's still going. And, yep, it's still there. They still have tigers, dolphins. Yeah. The memory of Siegfried and Roy is still there today.
You know, the way that Las Vegas always seems to be reinventing itself, that is by not just building something else, but tearing something down completely and then rebuilding on that spot. I've got to wonder, like for an example, they closed the Liberace Museum a few years ago. Liberace's home itself is in a state of disrepair. I don't think it's ever been a tourist attraction other than people driving by the thing. But if you do, it just looks like a dilapidated place. My point being is that Liberace kind of has gone out of the minds of most people. Younger people have no idea, maybe have heard the name or something. I'm wondering, carrying this over to Siegfried and Roy, at some point, where all these huge statues and different things that and plaques and talking about Siegfried and Roy, that will be destroyed, and they'll just kind of move on to whatever the next big thing is. You know, it'd be a sad thing for that to see that go. But
it'll get replaced with Matt King's Fig Newton Garden.
You know, I'm going to link that thought, Scott, goes hand in hand with what we were talking about with the Edison Magic Table closing in New York, and also the Magic Clubs losing members, and the Magic the two nationals losing attendees. Times change and generations move on.
True.
You know,
what's that target market in television? 18 to 24? I believe 24.
Yeah, right.
So that puts me. Yeah. So I'm 28. I shouldn't know who Liberace is. Why would anyone my age or younger be wanting to go to a Liberace museum when they are in Vegas?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it comes down to. If it was 20 years ago, maybe, but not. Yeah. Not if it was 30 years ago, maybe, but not.
Well, that kind of leads us to a wrap over here, and that is a kind of predictions of what you think is going to be happening next year.
Well, you talked about the big conventions, FISM, Magic Live, and Genie, all competing for our plus the IBM and the SAM, which no one's going to, all competing for our.
They're going to the IBM convention. They better come to Jacksonville.
You know,
we're going to have a great lineup.
Listen, I am buddies with Ken Scott, and Ken Scott booked the Jacksonville convention. It is a good lineup,
and we're going to have you also at the Magic Business University in April.
Yes, yes, I'll be there. I will be lecturing at the. Do you want to? I guess people who listen to you know about that.
I have no idea what you're talking about here.
Fill them in.
It's Scott and Eric Citron are going to be producing a magic convention in April in New Jersey, but it's not a magic convention where you learn tricks. It's a magic convention where you learn the business of being a full-time pro.
Cameron remembers back when he was a teenager going to Dave D conventions. That sound very similar to this.
Could have been.
Oh, Scott.
That doesn't ring a bell to any of these businesses.
No, I know who Dave D is, I didn't know he had conventions. I remember some of the text and the material that he had available for learning. But yes, it is going to be more geared towards how to make money in magic and not just perform, but how to do more shows and, you know, turn your passion into profits, you know, kind of thing that we'll talk about, your finances, writing contracts, the business
taxes.
Of taxes. That's right.
Marketing.
And marketing your show and for children's magic, that you're going to be presenting, talking about social media, your search engine SEOs, search engine optimization, that kind of a thing. Yeah. All these kinds of things that are very important. So it's not something necessarily that's going to be for those who are already full-time pros. It could be for those who are wanting to take that leap, or even those who are part-time that want to, you know, make another $1,000 a year or whatever it is. I mean, here are some opportunities that there's money just, you know, waiting for you to find. There are a lot of guys, as you know, magicians who are doing very well, but that you just don't hear about, and they're not on the cover of Magic Magazine, you know, because they either haven't been going to magic conventions or they haven't produced, the newest trick.
No, it's because they're working.
Exactly.
No, we don't have the time to go to our awards ceremonies.
Is that your excuse? next year, besides the conventions, I think the success of the Illusionists is going to bring, as we know, they're going to run 2.0, then they're going to do 1903. So they'll be live touring magic shows for the next year.
Supernaturalists,
Supernaturalists, yes. My new book.
Yeah.
Oh, we're just killing for time now.
You know, I'm wondering as far as new books, you know, that it seems that for a while with the proliferation of desktop publishing, there were a lot of books coming out, but I'm seeing fewer and fewer books coming out. And when they do, they seem to be more in PDF forms or ebooks. But I haven't talked to Marshall Peterson, who runs H&R Magic Books, but I'm curious to know if their sales have stagnated or fallen off. I would just guess they would, because I think fewer people are reading. They're watching more DVDs.
Yeah.
And
I think that's fair to say. I think that's pretty. That's true. Yes.
Well, listen, thank you guys very much for being on the Magic Word over here and kind of giving us your 2 cents. I think we could have wrapped this up within a half hour, but I'm glad we had listeners who are hopefully sticking around to the end here. Thank you, Cameron. Still there?
I am still here.
Scott. Thanks for
continuing
the podcast tradition. You're doing a good service for the magic world, and thanks for inviting me back.
Thanks, David.
I like doing it.
I appreciate you being on, and wish you a happy new year, David, and also Cameron. I hope that you have a prosperous and healthy new year as well, my friend.
Same to you.
All right, and so for the Magic Word podcast, this is Scotty out. I want to again thank my dear friends David Kay and Cameron Ramsey for making the time in their busy schedules to get together for this fun annual wrap-up of happenings in our magic community. I'm sure we didn't cover the things you wish we would have included, but be sure to post your comments in the section below the blog on the website. That way your thoughts can be included and read by everyone. I want to also apologize for those who were hoping to hear Dodd Vickers and Chase Goforth on this podcast. We tried multiple times to get everyone together to record something before year-end, but alas, due to the hectic holiday season and Dodd's busy schedule with new television and film projects, we were unable to connect this year. So we'll try again next year. And with that, I want to wish everyone a healthy, happy, and prosperous new year. May your calendar be full of great performances and amazing audiences. Until next week, this is Scotty out.